Well, this is me, the new Roshik. Wisping about, jumping from one place to another, in the blink of an eye, or faster. Here's one half-orc who's not going to get caught out again. No more getting shut in some other realm. I'll see it coming before that. Oh, if a mist starts closing around me again, I don't know. Better not think about that. Someone has my back now. She, that voice, forcing me to bow down and say I fear her. Do I actually fear her? I don't know. She has an awful lot of power over me. I wonder if she sees everything I do. Maybe it's as long as I use her powers that she does. But then again, all I have to do is agree to this little favor and I can use them as much as I like. Yeah, this is different, all right. And it's gonna keep me safe. Let's go for another journey, old friend.
This is Red Moon Roleplaying.
3 more hours of travel on the East Way finally has you arriving in the town of Bryn Shander. Bryn Shander is the largest of the 10 towns, although right now, maybe it's 8 towns, Roman might be thinking to himself. Situated on a hill, it is perfectly surrounded by a circular stone wall. It was one of the first towns to be founded, and hence is the biggest, and considered by some to be the capital of the 10 towns, even though that doesn't really have the same meaning to it as it does in other parts of the world. Still, it has not been spared the eternal winter. Several homes and businesses have closed down or been abandoned as people are leaving the city. This does mean, of course, there will be some room for the survivors who are coming in now from Goodmead and Dugan's Hole. However, even though there is room, and of course by old accord they will be welcomed, there is a sense of unease, more mouths to feed, and more bodies to keep warm. You are able to find a large storehouse, dealing in supplies and a few exotic items. Velen is willing to give you a moment to gather some extra provisions. After all, you already are in the town, so why not? You are able to find a place, and you are able to do a little bit of bartering, especially you, Roshek, with those quite valuable items you found. Sadly, you quickly realize you're not going to get the coin value, but with some clever dealings, you are able to trade the items for some items of similar worth. What do you and Roman get for yourselves?
I look through the warehouse that we ended up in, with all the goods being piled on shelves. I figure I might not get that much for this, but they are pretty. Perhaps is there something that they might have not realized the value of. And as I look around, I try to find something that would help protect me beyond, well, my simple leathers that I've been wearing and the furs.
You are able to find what looks to be a very nice enchanted cloak. Sadly, your desire for the proprietor to not know its value is ill-founded. The gnome seems quite shrewd and immediately recognizes that as one of his best items. He will only part with it for your greatest treasures.
And I begrudgingly trade in try to haggle as good as I can. The elaborate comb, the jewel dagger, and the mysterious skull that I found in order to get this cloak. I try to get him to let on something for my friend as well, seeing how he has been eyeing a particular suit of armor for a while now.
Bartering takes a few minutes, but you are actually able to snag on the armor as well. He claims you are robbing him of all his best goods, but then again, you feel that the items are quite valuable. He does mention that the skull is actually a Mind Flayer skull, which is a very rare find on the surface. So, you are able to get the items you need, as well, of course, as a few more rations, provisions, gear you think you'll need on a long journey.
Indeed, and having donned the plate armor, I feel... Yes, it feels good. I feel that this is going to be a very dangerous journey, and it is important for me to come back alive. So it feels fitting to make this investment. I'm certain that it will be needed. Lathander will protect me, but having this, well, that will help.
And with that, you mount up your dog sleds and begin journeying again. Sadly, Roshek, even if maybe you would like to explore a little, Velen is quite impatient and says you have a long journey ahead of you and don't have time to sample the two taverns Bryn Shander has.
I think to myself that it would be nice, perhaps, to sit in a tavern again, carelessly playing dice or cards, kings and jacks as it were, that me and Roman played. I'll not forget that first encounter. But there's something else tugging my sleeve now. It's as if those days are far gone. I can only remember that carefree attitude that I had with a hint of nostalgia. I could never completely go back to that again, I'm afraid.
And Roman, perhaps a little part of you wishes to follow up some of those leads you came up with. Velen was dismissive, but maybe you'd be interested in investigating what's going on here. After all, you came up with a very interesting theory. But then, it does seem as if that will have to wait.
Yes, well, we have a path laid out for us now, fighting this codicil of white. Well, it will help if we could unlock the magic power of the Netheril. Then we could make a real difference here. We could perhaps not just protect East Haven, but help rebuild it. It is worth following this particular path first. I can come back here later.
And so you leave by the North Gate, which leads onto the North Way. This is the name of the road that leads to Targos. However, you will shortly be leaving that road to begin cutting straight north towards the Sea of Moving Ice. 5 hours pass. The journey to the north is not quite as straight as the journey was to the south. You do need to occasionally zigzag a little. The lands here are not so flat. They are actually more hilly. And so you do need to detour around hills, sharp inclines, things that would be unsafe for you to just drive a dog sled straight off. Still, for the most part, as you leave the 10 towns behind, it is lonely and it is cold out here. Eventually, the silhouette of the great sea of moving ice begins to form to the north, but the sea is immense and it is still very far away. The dark day slowly begins to drift into dark evening. What do the two of you do on this long journey?
As the journey first starts out, I familiarize myself with this magical item that I have bought, and I attune myself to it, feeling how it becomes part of me now, and its magic somehow merging with mine. As the first hour or so passes, I do this, and I play around with the little spells and cantrips that I have, testing the borders and the powers of them now that we have a bit more time. But soon, as the ride becomes a bit more challenging, I find myself having to focus on keeping the axe beak straight. I have to dismount occasionally to help with the sled, even though the kobolds are doing a massive work whenever something gets stuck. I find myself mostly occupied with this, getting ourselves ever onwards.
And I find myself preoccupied with this plate armor, often adjusting the straps, trying to find just the perfect fit of it. I'm not used to wearing plate mail, but, well, I suppose eventually, after some time has passed, I find the right fit and the right adjustments needed to make it possible for me to wear this during extended periods of time.
You do. It's a little uncomfortable, but you are used to discomfort. If you do not bother Velen, she does not bother you. She leads from the front, her main dog sled, followed closely by her secondary sled, largely containing trunks of equipment. Neither of you are familiar with this sort of thing.
I suppose I will try to, during the journey, if there is ever a opportunity, try to glean some more information about the Netheril, about the Netherese Empire. Who were they, really? And yes, any kind of information that I can get that might be of use for us.
There will be a moment where there is a brief stop for some rations. If you go up to Velen and ask such questions, she will frown a little before remarking, "There's an awful lot to explain, and I am not actually a renowned scholar on absolutely everything. I had something very important that would have been able to answer better than myself, but I don't have it anymore. But, okay, a little bit of an explanation. So the Netheril, they were an extremely advanced civilization. They lasted, I think, thousands of years before falling 1,000 years ago. Or was it 2,000? Sometimes I forget the exact date. They were masters of the weave in ways we cannot possibly imagine today. You could argue that all modern magic is but a shallow reflection of the magics they were able to wield.
That is how they carved out an empire then across Faerun, yes? Through this magic that they had access to.
Precisely. They were able to cow any who challenged them, although they did have some opposition. Again, I can't recall that, though. It's not my speciality. I just know that their cities were renowned for having the greatest magical artifacts known in all of Faerun. The fact that one could still be able to be, well, explored, discovered, would be outstanding.
Indeed. Has there been attempts in the past to make use of artifacts from this culture? I mean, I believe that others would have had the same idea, and it must have had catastrophic consequences. No, I mean, the power, if what you say is true about these mythalars, then they could reshape reality.
Well, not reality. Change the weather, make things float. They're very powerful, but there are still limits. But of course, there have been numerous times in history where Netheril magic has been used. But again, it's always rather fleeting. Most people don't understand what they're dealing with. That sort of thing.
Well, I suppose it's good that I haven't heard so much about it then. It hasn't come up. Well, let's make sure that we use whatever we find responsibly, I say, and I smile.
Oh, of course. As I said, I have no interest in the Mythalar. It might not even be working anymore, but I'm hopeful it will be, and I'm sure it will help with this problem. I wouldn't recommend trying to make the city rise again, though. It will, after all, be in a glacier, so probably a very bad idea.
Yes, it probably would be.
Yes. Still, it should be most exciting indeed. Most exciting indeed. To clarify, by the way, if your question was about this particular city, Yifrin, no. It has taken a very long time for us... She pauses. For myself, to even have discovered the location in the first place. Never mind setting people out here to find it.
And so your assistant betrayed you. Looking for the same thing as you were looking for, I suppose, I say as I ride up next to them.
She snorts a little. Miss Lantomere was indeed looking for the same thing, but she is not my assistant.
Oh, companion then.
Wouldn't call her that either.
Competitor?
How about colleague?
Alright. You think we're gonna come to blows with her if we meet her?
Possibly. I'd rather not. Perhaps you, Roman, can do some of that talking you do, and if she gives back what she stole, I'm more than happy for her to get along her way.
I look forward pondering this, and I get something in my gaze. Is this something we should know about her if diplomacy fails?
Felin considers this for a moment, chewing on a piece of jerky, her hand quivering slightly as she eats. Well, what do you mean? Let me think. Oh, she's a wizard. She, I believe, specialized in the school of divination, I think. I don't really remember. I didn't pay much attention to her studies.
Well, I suppose you wouldn't have had a reason to fight her yourself. Might be good to know, though.
Yes, it might, but again, I'm hoping we'll be able to reach a peaceful accord.
I'm sure. I say, and I let my axe beak fall behind a bit again.
Felin looks towards you, Roman. Any other questions while we eat? Believe it or not, I'm willing to answer your questions. I just find most of them a little bit irritating. Doesn't mean I'm not willing to answer.
Well, what is it that we're not asking about? What is it that we should know, that we don't know? What is it that we are woefully ignorant about at this point?
She scoffs a little. Many things, but that's not your fault. You're a priest, and I'm still not entirely sure what Roshak is. So why is it your fault that you're not learned on several scholarly matters? No, as far as I'm concerned, all you need to know is that you're going to find what you need in the city, and it should be a most wondrous place.
Well then, I suppose I look forward to finding the city then. Let's get back to traveling as soon as we can. I say.
Indeed. As I said, first that codicil will be required. I'm not entirely sure what we'll have to do to get it. That is something I do not know. Hopefully, not a whole den of cultists. Oh my, I suppose that could be amusing in a story, but I personally prefer just to have things rather than, you know, have to fight my way through them. It's quite irritating, especially for a woman of my age.
Oh, I fully agree. It'd be great if we wouldn't have to fight anyone. Although, it usually doesn't work out that way. Don't worry, we'll protect you, I say.
Oh, thank you. That is why I hired you. And again, as I said, bar one or two things, I am more than happy for you to take whatever you want from Yifrin. Anything you want at all. I don't really care. I can't have all of it, after all.
Did you do much fighting then when you were younger, you mean?
No, I've barely fought in my life. I'm a wizard, I don't need to fight. Except, well, I do, but no, not in my earlier life, no.
More of a scholar, then.
Well, if anything, I was more of a... She pauses. I did what I had to do. Not that you'll be interested. Again, you don't seem to be aware of what my name means, which I'm actually very happy about.
We can't say now you said That, how am I supposed not to wonder what your name means?
My name is a very important noble family.
Oh.
Plenty people hear the name and would be asking for money, coin, can you get me to meet the Lord of Waterdeep, all that sort of rubbish.
Waterdeep? Is that where you grow up, then?
Yes.
Haven't been myself.
And I don't know anything about the Harpels, do I?
No, you would not. But you do know about Waterdeep, the City of Splendor, a magnificent city full of noble families.
Oh, yes, lots of nobles.
Precisely. I am quite happy for that order to have been left behind. Frankly, I have better things to be doing than sitting at tea parties, sipping wine, and talking about the harvests.
I see you must have been a disappointment for the aristocracy.
She wrinkles her nose and glares at you just for a few seconds.
I'm clearly taunting her.
And what, pray tell, would you know about aristocracy, Mr. Roshek?
I give a shrug. Well, I wouldn't play to be part of it that much myself. I was a king once, did you know? I say, and I just turn away to look at some other things.
She scoffs and goes, oh, really? Somehow I find that hard to believe. Whatever. Anyway, I can assure you I was not a disappointment.
And hearing Roshek mention that, I of course am reminded of the visions of what I saw and of the dreadful existence that he was stuck in. Is there more that I could have done? Could I have gotten him out of there? Maybe I could have insisted on him following me. Maybe I should have done that. And then I come back. Well, this is all very interesting, but don't you think we should move and find that bell?
Yes. She finishes her food and begins the journey once more. The hour is growing late. The darkness, as I said, becoming even darker. And you are becoming tired. You have now been riding almost a full day. Probably will be time to camp soon. It is as you are thinking this that you, Roshek, notice on the horizon, which has been mostly dark, lights. Several lights. Coming from campfires? It must be. Yes. Somewhere ahead, there is definitely some sort of campsite. What do you do?
I dismiss the conjured weapon that I'd had in my hand, smashing bushes and trees that we've ridden by in pure boredom and trying to keep myself awake. And I look up as I see this. What's this now? Some sort of encampment?
Velen pauses for a moment on the dog sled, looking herself. I'm not entirely sure. Looks like an encampment of some kind.
I suppose we'll have to have a look. I look over to Roman.
Well, yes. It might be good to know what we're dealing with here.
I try to squint and figure out how big is this? How many souls? Many campfires?
Roll me a perception test.
Oh, that's a natural 20.
You ride forward just a little more, but you're actually able to get a good grasp of the situation, even though you are still maybe a couple of minutes away from said camp. You think you can see what looks like 7 or 8 large tents surrounding a large main fire. These tents are then surrounded by another 10 tents, making a sort of circle around a circle shape, and there are several more large fires around these. You think you can see what looks like a large amount of sleds, about 10 or 20, maybe 30, hard to tell exactly, but you get a good grasp, and you think you can see several figures moving around said camp, although from this distance, hard to tell what they are. They are, of course, all heavily cloaked. Although, you, Roshek, do find that the cloaks look a little different to what you're used to. They don't look the same as the sort of rough cloaks you've been seeing in the Ten Towns, for example. They have a different look to them. A lot of people are also carrying weapons. However, they do seem to be, generally, in a camp, the purpose of which is to rest and... The purpose of which is to rest in, rather than suddenly attack you, for example.
As I look at them, I relay, it might be some sort of military encampment. Quite a lot of people there, lots of tents. People are armed. Who would be moving in this area, Velen?
Velen shrugs. But Roman, you could definitely think of who these people could be. There's only one sort of people who would be out here, in the middle of nowhere, setting up camps. They must be ragged nomads.
Of course. It's the ragged nomads. They live on the glacier normally, right? Or do they live around the glacier?
They travel wherever they wish. They follow the reindeer. Therefore, they can be absolutely anywhere, as long as it isn't too near the Ten Towns. This is because the Ten Towners and the Ragged Nomads don't totally get along very well. Although in the time you've been in Icewind Dale, there are accords in place where they generally leave each other alone, and it's not so bad if they occasionally come into a town, trade, but it's rare.
Yes. Well, we don't get along terribly well with them. I mean, we are sort of competing for the same scarce resources in these lands. But as long as we don't get in the way of them and their reindeers, I'm sure it will be fine. We might even be able to trade with them or, get them to help us somehow. There's no one that knows these lands better than they do.
Nomads, you say?
Yes.
Well, that sounds fine, I suppose, for some rest and, safety in numbers and all that.
Do you think so, Roman? You don't think they'll be dangerous? I suppose if what you say is true, it would be nicer to camp in a civilized place with some people who will be willing to, you know, give us something in return. Do they take coin?
Well, they do sometimes trade with the Ten Towns. It is rare, but, well, they might find some use of that. Probably more use of something that they could use directly. Some equipment or, well, what have you. We can see what they might find interesting. Let's be respectful and let's not, bother them.
I flinch suddenly as a memory comes back of tents and colourful wagons. A memory from way back. But I don't say anything, though you might notice the flinch.
It's an interesting memory, although of course different. Those individuals travelled in wagons. These individuals have no such thing. They have sleds. They are also significantly more battle-ready, from what you can see. Every single person looks armed here.
As we draw closer, I ride closer to Roman and I mutter, "Are they honourable? Will they consider cutting our throats and leaving us on the snow bleeding?"
They live very close to nature. I don't think that they particularly embrace killing for killing's sake. And I think they are also smart enough to know that, any kind of violence against the inhabitants of the Ten Towns will lead to reprisals. So I think we will be safe as long as we do not upset them somehow.
Of course, Roman, there is a little doubt in your heart, because you know it does depend on the tribe. Some tribes are exactly as you say, but you do believe there are rumors that some tribes would indeed happily cut your throat. It depends on which one you're meeting and how you'd conduct your diplomacy. Also, you know that some of it is hearsay, because some people in the Ten Towns consider every single one of them barbarians and enemies of civilization, which, of course, you know, is a lot of rubbish.
Indeed.
I seem somewhat reassured by your answer, and I lean back a little bit in my saddle.
Well, let's ride up to them and ask if it is all right for us to join them for the night.
You begin riding closer to this camp. When you are quite close to the outer perimeter, already you see that you are going to be met by 5 or 6 armed individuals carrying large spears. They simply stand, waiting for you to come to them. As you get closer, Roshik, you now see what the difference is in the clothing. Whereas the Ten Towners' clothing is made of cloth and heavy wools, this is animal hide they wear. Coarse brown fur. Reminds you of something, but you're not quite sure what it is yet. Some of them also have what look like horns tied to their person, which you quickly realize look very similar to what you saw on those reindeer that Roman told you of earlier. They await you, looking quite grim against the firelight, but they are not moving aggressively. What do you do?
I move up on my axe beak. I try to be as unthreatening as possible in my moves and in my posture and everything, and I have a smile on my face as I approach. Oh there, we're travelers from East Haven. We would like to ask if we could perhaps visit your camp and stay with you for the night.
An individual comes forward with a big, thick black beard, quite tall. You notice, Roderick, actually, that all of them are quite tall, rather hench. Normally, the answer would be no. Tonight, something very important is happening. However, you are lucky, Ten Towner. You are expected.
Oh, expected, you say? That is interesting. Well, I suppose we shouldn't keep them waiting. This is Roshik, and this here is Velen. And I point to the kobolds. And these here they're kobolds, but fear not, they are kind.
The figure laughs a little when you say, "Do not fear the kobolds." This then makes everyone laugh for a few moments. He then simply nods and gestures to one of the tents near the inner circle. He says, "In the camp, you may keep your weapons. If you draw them, we will kill you. Do not go anywhere near the central tent. Do not disturb the guests we have. You are expected at the shaman's tent."
Oh, that is perfectly acceptable. We will follow your rules. We are guests here. I begin trying to sort of motion to everyone to follow and of course make sure that all the kobolds know what's what in terms of rules and we begin moving into the camp.
You move into the camp. The sounds of life are all around you now, Roshek. You can hear somewhere the sounds of children. Some people are laughing somewhere. People give you a bit of a look as you go through, but it is not a look of hostility, merely curiosity. As you see several camps of people, families, gutting fish, cooking food, carving little things from wood.
I look at the people with a little bit of suspicion, but as we get into the camp and see the families, children, and more mundane activities, I start feeling a bit reassured. I once again lean over to Roman. Oh, what does she mean by that we're expected? Is that something common with these people as well?
Well, we're expected at the shaman's. I think again, Roshik, we are finding ourselves in the middle of something of great importance, some kind of world-changing event. Just this time, in our home, in our own world, not in the other one. Let us see what the gods have in mind for us.
You finally get near the center circle of tents. The fire here is the largest. Someone nods in the direction of one of the large tents. Again, these tents seem to be made largely of animal furs, big, strong wood, set to not be permanent. Roshik, you are familiar with a campsite. All these sort of tents could easily be packed up quickly, condensed in size, put on a sled, and moved on. But while they are here, they are sturdy and they are warm. You also notice there is a larger tent, a little bit away, that you see there are some people around that tent. They look a little different. They are still wearing animal hide, but you immediately notice that compared to everyone else's dark brown hides, they are wearing something more striped. They also have on their head, instead of antlers, what look like the teeth of some sort of lion or tiger. This is part of their decoration. There are about 10 of them around the central camp. As you are approaching this shaman's tent, one of them gives you a look, reaches for a weapon. Someone nearby, one of the brown-hided individuals, sort of just shakes their head. But these individuals look at you very suspiciously, far more suspicious than anyone else has while they're here.
I meet their gaze, equally suspicious of them. It must be the guests that they talked about, I say to Roman.
Yes, I suppose so. Oh well, you have nothing to fear from us, I say, and I try to look as unthreatening as possible.
As you say that out loud, one of these individuals, in what you think reminds you of some sort of tiger skin, laughs heartily. Nothing to worry about, Tentowner. Good to know. Does that mean I can skin you alive now and it'll be fun? His friends all laugh.
I just smile to him.
My fingers itch at the taunt. Should put these people in their place, but we promised not to draw any weapons. And I look towards the shaman's tent, and I dismount, I suppose. Or are we already dismounted?
Actually, you would already have dismounted. Your axe beaks would have been placed with the dog sleds and several other vessels these individuals seem to have. They don't seem to have any of their own axe beaks. It seems they largely get around entirely on dog sleds. But they have an awful lot of dogs and an awful lot of sleds.
Well then, I just nod towards the shaman's tent. Let's see if they have yet another thing for us to do.
Yes, let's.
And I feel a bit of excitement, actually. It is. Things are unfolding. This is things with some sort of purpose. This feels strangely good. I like the tinge of not being completely sure of what's going to happen next.
The individuals glaring at you for a moment bristle a little. The one you meet with your smile, Roman, smiles back and looks like he's about to stand, but they all then have their attention drawn to the tent they are near, where raised voices suddenly come from. But nothing then immediately happens after this. It just seems the people in that tent are having a loud conversation. So you continue to your tent. There are some individuals standing outside. You notice them to be women. Although even the women here are large and powerful looking. One of them has one eye, sort of just eyes you for a moment with the one eye before nodding and opening the tarp. Inside the tent is simple, much like the outside. Inside there is though a simple fire pit, not letting off too much smoke. You, Roshik, of course, look upwards and see that the tent naturally does have ventilation so the smoke can leave. However, there is an awful lot of smoke in here still. You smell incense on the air, Roman. Velen accompanies you, but it seems she is quite happy to let you take the lead here. She's simply happy to have the warmth and some shelter, it seems. As you go in, you see sitting by the fire pit a great figure. At least it seems a great figure, largely because of what it's wearing. Brown animal skin, thick hides like everyone else, but also a full skull. An elk skull, or a deer skull, you think to yourself. They're wearing it like a mask. You cannot see anything of the person underneath the mask, but it is a very impressive looking mask. They sit cross-legged by this fire pit, sort of just waiting for you to come in. What do you do?
Seeing as how we are expected, I sort of move into the tent gently and respectfully, and move closer, looking for some kind of sign to sit down or something like that.
The figure chuckles. Ah, come, sit. Sit by the fire pit. Be warm and welcome. The elk tribe welcomes you tonight.
I do as I am invited to, and I do sit down and I start to shrag off a few of my clothes and furs so that I can let the fire soak into me directly. Yes, good evening, Shaman.
Please, call me by my name. Benjir.
Enjir. I am Roshik, and this is Roman.
Yes, we are honored to be your guests this evening, and we understand that you have been waiting for us. And as you can understand that, well, we had to come.
Yeah. Yeah. It is all good. I have been waiting for you. The individual picks up what looks like some sort of wooden cup and begins to shake it. They then lay it down hard in front of them. They reveal what is underneath. Runic dice. Very interesting looking. There seem to be about 15 of them. Yeah. You are expected tonight. Or maybe it would have been tomorrow. I wasn't quite sure.
What, do these dice tell you?
Velen takes a seat herself and raises an eyebrow. Ah, a form of divination. How interesting. That is what some might call it. I call it simply seeing what may or may not be. Although, sometimes, it is hard to tell which is which, no?
Yeah, I suppose. I look at them curiously, trying to make out the different runes.
I hope you are finding the camp good? No one being unpleasant to you?
It is perfectly acceptable, I say. We understand that, well, there's a complicated history between our peoples. I wouldn't hold it against anyone who might be bothered by us being here. But they have nothing to fear from us, right, Roshik?
About to start a sentence, I cut myself off as Roman goes his diplomatic way and I just bite my tongue.
Oh, I assure you, we have nothing to be afraid of. But do not worry. I am happy to see you. I'm honored to have you in my tent.
And who are those itchy people outside with the teeth hats?
Ah, the tiger, you know how they are, always eager to pounce, always eager to circle their prey. It is their way, it is not an issue.
I see. Sounds like a decent sort, I suppose.
Sometimes, although other times they are brusque. Still, the king will make his decision tonight. The queen will have to accept it.
Oh, is there some sort of diplomacy going on here? Some sort of meeting?
The figure bobs its head slightly. Yeah, Queen of the Tiger has come to speak to the King of the Elk. She wishes for unpleasant deeds. He will refuse her, but we need to make sure it is all done correctly.
I suppose at that. You have your customs. We won't interfere. We do not plan to stay further than the night anyways.
Of course, you have places to be. She picks up the dice, puts them back in the cup, shakes it again, puts them down again.
Well?
Silence for a bit. The cackling of the fire. People outside. Velen sort of shifts a little uncomfortably.
I sit back, relax a bit, and I start undoing my boots as well to warm up my feet.
After a moment, the figure stirs a little. Yeah, the issue is sometimes you must be careful what you say and what you do not. You might think saying something will make something happen, but it can sometimes have the opposite. Yeah?
Yes, there's wisdom in those words.
Thank you. You free, on this night, journeying to a sea of cold. What will you find, I wonder? I do not know, but I do know that you might be key to solving, well, some of the problems we have, yeah?
We hope so. We hope that us saving our town will save everyone here. Bring back the light.
The figure, you can't quite tell if she's looking at you, Roman, but it does feel as if the mask tilts in your direction. Why is that important to you?
Light is everything. Without light, there is no life. We will all perish slowly if this darkness continues. We must bring it back. My god demands it, and our people need it.
And yet your god is but one of many, ah? What of life that exists in the darkness? It does exist. It is not all bad.
Oh, of course. Of course. But there are plenty of dark places still. Fewer light ones here.
True. What is occurring is not as it should be. Sylvanas is not happy. Yet, it is happening anyway. But that is it. You seek light just because your god tells you to seek light.
And because our friends' lives depend on it. Our town's continued existence depends on the light coming back. That is why.
That is a better way to think of it. It is a better way. And yet, I see, she points to one of the dice, still the prideful one still follows you, friend. Not as strongly as it once did, apparently, but I still see it in the dice. That is not always a bad thing, of course, but it can be.
It's difficult to change who we are, but it's good to be aware of your weaknesses and the things that can potentially drag you down.
She picks the dice up.
As you talk, Roman, I examine you, your expression, trying to read beyond the diplomatic Roman just to see how you feel truly about that now. Is it just empty words, or is it something that you truly wish for, or is it a struggle?
I think you will find that it is a struggle. I have changed. I have been humbled. I have atoned. But a part of me still thinks that that whole thing was damn unfair. I didn't do anything wrong. I killed the devil. I brought back the light. Why should I have been punished for that?
I look at you and nod as I try and read your expressions, and the shaman talks on.
She picks up one of the dice. Yes, pride still follows you. I don't know if that will cause issue or not, but it is a sign. All I can do is read the dice. You, on the other hand, most interesting. Yes, I see both the great leader, but also element of the fool, or the foolish one. The runes aren't always as literal as I'm making them, you understand? I'm just trying to make them a little more comprehensible.
I have been doing my share of trying to be a good leader, yes. I suppose. So there's some truth to that. And again, I suppose I am a fool. I wonder what my brother would have said to that if he had been alive. I say, and I give her a mysterious smile.
You can't tell what expression this individual is making. The skull just stares at you silently. It nods its head a little. Yeah, interesting. I'm not sure which you are. You could be either. It is difficult to tell, but I think a choice might need to be made. Or maybe there's a third way. It's hard to tell, yeah?
I suppose we all have our choices to make. Is there anything to drink in this place?
Of course. We have water. Would you like it brought to you? Water! Water! They make a bit of a gesture, and someone quickly comes in with a flagon of crystal clear water.
I'm not sure if I was supposed to be disappointed at that, but for some reason water sounds perfectly fine. And I start sipping it, and indeed, this is the most clear water I've ever had in my life, it feels like.
It certainly does taste good. The figure turns briefly to Velen as well. And for you, well, I'm not so sure. I think you might find what you want, but you might have to decide if that is what you really want. Velen sort of snorts a little and goes, yes, well, that's awfully vague, isn't it? But the school of divination is tricky. Yeah, it is. Again, there's silence. This figure seems quite calm, quite relaxed. This is not the silence of hostility or trying to cow you in any way. It simply seems this person is quite happy just to chat with you in their tent for hours on end. After a bit of a pause, though. Well, do you have any questions?
Well, I suppose you said that you'd been expecting us. I guess I was expecting some kind of grand and epic quest or, well, some kind of prophecy that we were set to fulfill. It is how these things tend to work, no?
I smirk a bit at that and I have another sip of water.
The being chuckles a little. No prophecies today. I do not do those. If you want, I can tell you some stories, but they are just stories. No, I felt you might be here. I feel you're going somewhere. I think it is important. I merely wish to meet you and have a word. I hope what I've said has made you think. It should. That will be important.
It has.
I suppose at that.
The figure bobs their head. This does need to be sorted out. I think you might be able to begin the process. I wish you luck. We will, I think, meet again. But I'm not sure.
Well, thank you for your hospitality. I suppose we will be setting up our own little resting place, not too much in the way of your grounds.
Yeah, you are welcome by the outskirts. None of the elk will bother you.
And the tiger?
They will not bother you while they are here. Outside of the tent, I'm afraid I cannot promise that.
That's good enough, I suppose, I say, and I look over at Roman and Velen.
Yes, that is perfectly acceptable.
If you encounter them, I would also be wary of the wolf of late. They have fallen greatly. But the bear, I do not know. They pick up the dice, roll them, put them back down again. Always hard to tell, yeah? Always hard to tell.
I start putting my things back on again. And I once again think back on older days of meeting people and celebrating with them, sharing their drinks and their food. But now I have a feeling that I want to move on. I feel almost as if I'm haunted by something. A feeling of loneliness.
You hear a little voice, quite quiet. My dear Roshik, why do you feel lonely? I am always here for you.
I give a shiver as I stand up and I think about the people who have been my company for the last 10 years, or how long it was. The dead, the elf, the baby brother strangled by his own umbilical cord, and the ogre with the axe in his head.
All gone now, all in the past, except of course in your mind, where they still remain. Roman, the figure seems to have become silent again. You could, of course, you feel, continue to speak, but you also feel that the individual has said what they feel they need to say.
Well, knowing that, I feel content.
there were truths in what they said, and it somehow makes me feel safe. I don't know why.
Velen gets up. Well, thank you very much. We will make ourselves a little area outside your camp. We are grateful for a peaceful negotiation. Very good. And begins walking out swiftly. What do the two of you do?
I nod respectfully, and I also move out.
Returning the vessel with water, I bow in thanks to the person that I give it to, and as well to the shaman. And then I start making my way out as well.
And you make your way out back into the night, a light snow beginning to fall over the camp, the crackling sound of fire behind you as the shaman simply rolls their dice one more time.
You have listened to an episode of Red Moon Roleplaying, where we played Icewind Dale, Rime of the Frost Maiden, for Dungeons & Dragons 5th Edition. The music was created by Flowers for Body Snatchers, Ugasanye, Word Clock, and Metatron Omega, and was used with permission from their label, Cryochamber. Check them out at cryochamber.bandcamp.com or their YouTube channel for more dark ambient. We would like to give massive thanks to our champions of the Red Moon, Martin Hoyschobert, Nastasha Rollerson, Simon Cooper, David, Julia, and David Hogbarry for their generous support. And we would of course like to thank all of our other patrons. Without your support, this show would not be possible. If you want to support our work, please check us out on Patreon. You can get access to bonus campaigns for Cult Divinity Lost and Coriolis there, as well as get early and raw access to all of our recordings. You can also hear your name read on the show as a champion of the Red Moon, as well as play Cult with us. Most importantly, that support is what keeps the show going, so do check us out there. May Lathander protect you and fill the world with light.